Welcome to Stories from the Shadows, haunted tales from the golden age of ghost stories and supernatural fiction. I'm Mardell, and this week's story is The Horla by Guy de Maupassant. The eminent Dr. Morand, most renowned of alienists, had asked three of his colleagues and four scholars who worked in the natural sciences to come spend an hour at his residence, the sanatorium he directed, to show them one of his patients. As soon as his friends were assembled, he told them, "I am going to set before you the strangest and most unsettling case I have ever encountered. Moreover, I have nothing to tell you about my client. He will speak for himself." Then the doctor rang. An orderly ushered in a man. He was very thin as a corpse, as thin as certain madmen who are eaten away by a thought. For a sick thought can devour the body's flesh more than fever or consumption. When he had greeted everyone and sat down, he started. "Gentlemen, I know why you are gathered here today, and I am ready to tell you my story just as my friend Dr. Morand has asked me. For a long time, he thought I was mad. Today, he is not so sure. In a little while, you will all know that I have as healthy, as lucid, as perceptive a mind as your own. Unfortunately for me and for you, and for all of humanity. But I want to begin with the facts themselves, with the simple facts. Here they are. I am 42 years old. I am not married. My wealth is enough to live with a certain luxury. I was living on my estate, on the shores of the Seine in Biassard, near Rouen. I love hunting and fishing. Behind me, beyond the great rocks that tower above my house, I had one of the most beautiful forests in France, the forest of Rumer, and in front of me one of the finest rivers in the world. My house is immense, painted white on the outside, handsome, ancient, in the middle of a large garden planted with magnificent trees that stretches to the forest, climbing the enormous rocks I just mentioned. My staff consisted, of a coachman, a gardener, a valet, a cook, and a laundress, who was also a kind of housekeeper. All these people had lived in my home anywhere from 10 to 16 years. They knew me, knew my house, the countryside, all that surrounded me in my life. They were good, contented servants. That is important for what I am about to tell you. Let me add that the Seine, which runs alongside my garden, is navigable as far as Rouen, as I'm sure you know. Every day I would see great ships pass by under sail or steam, coming from all the corners of the world. A year ago last fall, I was suddenly overcome with peculiar and inexplicable feelings of uneasiness. At first, it was a sort of nervous anxiety that kept me awake for whole nights at a time. I was so hypersensitive that the least sound made me tremble. My mood turned bitter. I had sudden, inexplicable rages. I called a doctor who prescribed potassium bromide and showers. So morning and evening, I made myself take showers, and I began to take the bromide. Soon, in fact, I did begin to sleep again, but the sleep was more terrifying than the insomnia. As soon as I went to bed, I closed my eyes and was annihilated. Yes, I fell into the void, into an absolute void, into a death of my entire being from which I was suddenly horribly jolted by the dreadful feeling of a crushing weight on my chest, and of a mouth that was eating up my life. On my mouth, the shock of it. I've never known anything more horrible. Imagine to yourselves a man asleep who has been murdered and who wakes up with a knife in his throat and who moans covered with blood, who can no longer breathe, who will die, but who doesn't understand why. That's what it's like. I kept getting steadily, alarmingly thinner. One day I noticed that my coachman, who had been quite fat, was beginning to grow thin like me. Finally, I asked him, "What is wrong with you, Jean? You are sick." He replied, "I do believe I've got the same illness as Monsieur. My nights are eating up my days." I thought at the time that there was a feverish influence in the house because of the proximity of the river, and that I should go away for 2 or 3 months, even though we were in the middle of the hunting season. But then a small, peculiar fact, observed by chance, brought about such an unlikely, fantastic, and terrifying series of discoveries for me that I stayed home. I was thirsty one evening and drank half a glass of water. I noticed that my carafe, standing on the chest of drawers opposite my bed, was full up to the crystal stopper. During the night, I had one of those dreadful awakenings I've just told you about. I lit my candle, prey to terrible anxiety, and when I went to take another drink of water, I saw with astonishment that my carafe was empty. I couldn't believe my eyes. Either someone had entered my bedroom or I had become a sleepwalker. The next evening, I wanted to perform the same test, so I locked my door in order to be sure no one could penetrate my room. I went to sleep and woke up as I did every night. Someone had drunk all the water that I had seen 2 hours before. Who had drunk this water? Myself, no doubt, and yet I was certain, absolutely certain, that I hadn't made a movement in my deep and painful sleep. So I resorted to tricks to convince myself that I was not performing these acts unconsciously. One evening I placed next to the carafe a bottle of old Bordeaux, a glass of milk, which I hate, and some chocolate cakes, which I love. The wine and cakes remained intact. The milk and water disappeared. Every day, then, I changed the drinks and the food. Never did someone touch the solid, thick foods. And as to the liquids, someone drank nothing but fresh milk and, above all, water. But this heartbreaking doubt remained in my soul. Couldn't I be the one who was getting up without being aware of it, and who was drinking even the things I disliked, since my senses, numbed by somnambulistic sleep, might be changed, might have lost their ordinary dislikes and acquired different tastes. So I used a new trick against myself. I wrapped strips of white muslin on all the objects that would certainly have to be touched, and I covered them all with a cotton napkin. Then, when it was time for me to go to bed, I smeared my hands, lips, and mustache with graphite. When I woke up, all the objects remained spotless, although someone had touched them, for the napkin was not placed as I had left it, and moreover, someone had drunk the water and the milk. Yet my door, which I had shut with a safety lock, and my shutters padlocked as a precaution, would have kept anyone out of the room. Then I asked myself the overwhelming question, who was there every night close to me? I sense, gentlemen, that I am telling you all of this too quickly. You are smiling. Your opinion has already been formed. He is a madman. I should have described to you at length my emotions. The emotions of a man who, locked up at home with a healthy mind, sees, through the glass of a carafe, a little water that has vanished while he slept. I should have made you understand this torture renewed every night and every morning, and that invincible sleep and even those more dreadful awakenings. But I will go on. All of a sudden, the miracle stopped. Someone no longer touched anything in my room. It was over. I was feeling better. My happiness returned when I learned that one of my neighbors, Monsieur de Gite, was in just the same condition that I had been in myself. I believed again in a feverish influence in the countryside. My coachman had left me a month ago very ill. The winter passed, and spring began. One morning, as I was walking near my rose garden, I distinctly saw, quite close to me, the stem of one of the most beautiful roses break, as if an invisible hand had picked it. Then the flower followed the curve an arm would have described as it carried it to a mouth, where it remained suspended in the transparent air, all alone, motionless. Terrifying. 3 feet from my eyes, seized with a mad horror, I hurled myself on it to seize it. I found nothing. It had disappeared. Then I was overcome with a furious rage against myself. A reasonable and serious man cannot permit himself such hallucinations. But was it indeed a hallucination? I looked for the stem. I found it immediately on the bush, freshly broken, between 2 other roses that had remained on the branch, for there had been 3 of them, as I had seen perfectly. I returned home, my soul in turmoil. Gentlemen, listen to me. I am calm. I did not believe in the supernatural. I do not even believe in it today. But from that moment onward, I was sure as I am of day and night, that there existed near me an invisible being who had haunted me, then left me, and who was returning. A little later, I had proof of this. Among my servants, every day furious arguments broke out for 100 reasons that seemed trivial at first, but soon were full of meaning for me. A glass, a beautiful Venetian glass, broke all by itself on the hutch in my dining room in the middle of the day. The valet accused the cook, who accused the laundress, who accused I don't know who. Doors that had been closed at night were open in the morning. Someone was stealing the milk every night from the pantry. What was it? What was its nature? A nervous curiosity mixed with anger and horror kept me day and night in a state of constant agitation. But the house grew calm once again. I was beginning to believe it was all a dream when the following happened. It was July 20th at 9 o'clock in the evening. It was very hot out. I had left my window wide open. My lamp lit my table, illuminating a volume of Musset's poems open to his May night. I had stretched out in a big armchair and fallen asleep. I slept for about 40 minutes, then opened my eyes without making any movement, awakened by some strange, confused emotion. At first I saw nothing. Then all of a sudden it seemed to me that a page of the book had just turned all by itself. No breath of air had come in through the window. I was surprised, and I waited. After about 4 minutes, I saw, gentlemen, with my own eyes, another page lift itself and fall back on the preceding one as if a finger had turned it. The chair seemed empty, but I realized that it was there. It. I crossed to my room in a single bound to seize it, to touch it, to grasp it, if that were possible. But the chair, before I could reach it, toppled over, as if someone were fleeing from me. My lamp, too, fell and went out, the glass broken, and my window was slammed, as if some thief had seized it as he fled, striking at the latch. I threw myself at the bell pull and called out. When my valet appeared, I said to him, "I've knocked everything over and broken everything. Give me some light." I slept no more that night, but I thought I might once again have been the plaything of an illusion. When one wakes up, one's senses are still confused. Wasn't it I who had knocked over my chair and my light, hurrying like a madman? No, it was not me. I knew it so positively, I didn't doubt it for a second. And yet I wanted to believe it was me. Wait. The being. What should I call him? The invisible? No, that's not good enough. I baptized him the Horla. Why? I have no idea. The Horla then scarcely ever left me. Day and night I had the sensation, the certainty of the presence of this elusive neighbor, and I was certain, too, that he was taking my life, hour by hour, minute by minute. The impossibility of seeing him exasperated me, so I kept all the lamps lit in my rooms, as if I could reveal him with all this brightness. I saw him, finally. You do not believe me, but I did see him. I was sitting in front of some book, not reading, but keeping watch, with all my overexcited senses, keeping watch for the one I felt so close to me. He was definitely there, but where? What was he doing? How could I reach him? Across from me was my bed, an old oaken four-poster, to the right, the fireplace, to the left, the door, which I had carefully closed. Behind me, a very large wardrobe with a mirror I used every day to shave and get dressed, and in which I had the habit of looking at myself from head to foot every time I passed in front of it. So I was pretending to read in order to trick him. For he, too, was spying on me, and suddenly I felt, I was certain, that he was reading over my shoulder, that he was there, grazing my ear. I stood up, turning around so quickly that I almost fell over. You could see everything in the room as if in full daylight. But I did not see myself in my mirror. It was empty, clear, full of light. My image was not inside it, yet I was facing it. I saw the large glass, limpid from top to bottom. I watched it with panic-stricken eyes, and I no longer dared to move forward, feeling him between us. Him, aware that he would escape me again, but that his imperceptible body had absorbed my reflection. I was terrified. Then suddenly I began to see myself in a mist, in the depths of the mirror, in a mist as if through a sheet of water, and it seemed to me that this water shimmered from left to right, slowly, making my image more precise from second to second. It was just like the end of an eclipse. What was hiding me did not seem to possess any clearly defined outlines, but a sort of opaque transparency that little by little grew clearer. Finally, I was able to distinguish myself completely, just as I do every day when I look at myself. I had seen him. The horror of it has remained with me and makes me shudder still. The next day I was here, where I begged them to keep me. Now, gentlemen, I will conclude. Dr. Morand, after doubting me for a long time, finally decided to travel alone to my country. Three of my neighbors are currently affected just as I was. Isn't that true? The doctor replied, "It's true." You advised them to leave out some water and milk every night in their bedroom to see if these liquids would disappear. Did these liquids disappear as they did at my house? The doctor replied with solemn gravity, "They disappeared." So, gentlemen, a being, a new being, who no doubt will soon multiply, just as we have multiplied, has just appeared on Earth. Yeah, you smile. Why? Because this being remains invisible. But our eye, gentlemen, is such an elementary organ that it can scarcely discern what is indispensable to our existence. Whatever is too small escapes it. Whatever is too large escapes it. Whatever is too far away escapes it. It is unaware of the animals that live in a drop of water. It is unaware of the inhabitants, the plants, and the surface of neighboring stars. It can't even see what is transparent. Place in front of it a perfect two-way mirror, and it will not perceive it. It will make us walk right into it, just as a bird caught in a house breaks his neck on the window panes. It does not see the solid and transparent bodies that nevertheless exist. It does not see the air we live on, does not see the wind that is the strongest force in nature, that knocks men down, topples buildings, uproots trees, whips the sea up into mountains of water that make granite cliffs crumble. Why should it be surprising if our eye cannot see a new body, one that evidently lacks the property of blocking light rays? Can you see electricity? And yet it exists. This being, which I have named the Horla, also exists. Who is it? Gentlemen, it is the one the Earth is waiting for. The one that will succeed mankind. The one who is coming to dethrone us, subjugate us, tame us, feed on us, perhaps, just as we fed on the ox and the wild boar. For centuries we have had a foreboding of him. We have dreaded him and foretold him. The fear of the invisible always haunted our ancestors. He has come. All the fairy tales, the legends about goblins and ungraspable and malevolent prowlers of the air, it was he they were talking about. He is the one of whom an already anxious and trembling humanity had some premonition. And everything you yourselves have been doing, gentlemen, in recent years, what you call hypnotism, suggestion, magnetism, it is he you are heralding and prophesying. I tell you, he has come. He prowls about, anxious himself as the first men were, still ignorant of his own force and power, that he will come to know soon, too soon. And now, gentlemen, to finish, a fragment from a newspaper I came across, which comes from Rio de Janeiro. I quote, "A sort of epidemic of madness seems for some time to have been raging in the province of Sao Paulo. The inhabitants of several villages have run away, abandoning their land and their houses, claiming they are pursued and consumed by invisible vampires that are feeding on their breath while they sleep, and that otherwise drink nothing but water and sometimes milk." I will add, a few days before the first attack of the sickness, from which I almost died, I vividly recall seeing a grand Brazilian three-master pass by with its flag flying. I told you that my house was on the water's edge, all white. He was hidden on this ship without a doubt. I have nothing more to add, gentlemen. Dr. Morand rose and murmured, "Nor I. I do not know if this man is mad, or if we are both mad, or if our successor has actually arrived." Join me next week for more tales of the unseen and the unknown on Stories from the Shadows. Until then, I wouldn't blame you if you leave the lights on.